This is the Freedom Fiends, triggering you with the most delicious diet of worms the central scrutinizers will allow. We tip every sacred cow, we kill every Buddha on the road to rattle the infantilized masses into existential crisis. This is your reminder that Freedom Fiends is brought to you by the BIPCOT No Government License, which means you are free to use it unless you work for the state. You can find out more at BIPCOT.org. I'm here with Ben Stone. How's it going, Ben?
Hey, Davi. How's it going?
I'm good. Cool. I'm doing really good. I'm on the radio.
Yeah. So you had the ultimate luxury of going to Porkfest for a full week. I missed it this year. How's that?
Was
it
fun? Missed you.
Did you have a hoot?
I had a great time. I had a hoot and a holler, both of them. Yeah, it was great fun. It's this is the 12th annual Kingdom Fancaster, New Hampshire, and it was about 2,000 people out in the woods beneath the White Mountains, and it was beautiful, and the weather was great most of the week, and we had some fun projects, like we had a voting machine so that people could come and, you know, waste their time, and it was a good time had by all.
I know you've talked about the voting machine on the Fiends before, but with this being a weekend show, let's kind of describe what that thing was. So it was a slot machine. You can buy these slot machines and then do stuff to them to make them do the way you want. But did it actually pay out money, or was it tokens, or how did the thing work?
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, there's Michael.
I did. What's up, Michael? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. How do I sound?
You sound great.
Good.
Yeah. I'm using this little $100 Windows pad in the other room, wireless, and I like it.
Cool.
Are we on a show? Is this live?
This is live. We are. You are absolutely interrupting the show.
Well, that's good. It's if it works, it works. You know, and you know, I think I've always wanted that more than a radio show, because a radio show is so much work. Well, I do a lot of work anyway, but what I really wanted was a radio show I could just interrupt. You know, because I always wanted to call into radio shows. I mean, Free Talk Live will let me on if I wait an hour and, you know, then I get on for 10 minutes. But no radio show will let me on, you know. So I had to build my own that I could just, like, I don't even have to call. I just interrupt with magical software we invented. And it works.
Yep.
So you have
what's the topic?
Well, we were talking about the slot.
We're kind of talking Pork Fest.
Okay. Well yeah, so the technology I'm using was... didn't Derek Slopey, the guy who made Fiendphone, have something or a lot to do with the slot machine, or was that the voting machine?
Yeah,
I forget.
The voting machine was a slot machine. It was essentially performance art to remind everybody that voting is gambling.
Yeah.
And it was just a conventional slot machine. The innards were normal, so you could technically win, although the argument don't care. You're sort of spinning, hoping to get the candidate you want.
That's funny. Yeah.
But yeah, it was Derek Slopey's machine.
Yep. Whose idea was it?
I don't know. I think it might have just come from the ether. Probably mostly Derek's idea.
Yeah. Well, he's the that new breed of, like, hacker that's, you know, not just a software hacker. He's a hardware hacker, too. I like that. That's kind of how it was. You know, when I was a kid, like, hey, I'm getting some echo. Whose headphones are leaking?
I don't know.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, like, hackers were mostly hardware hackers because, you know, computers were hard to come by and they cost millions of dollars. I mean, people who read Popular Mechanics magazine and tinkered in their basement, you know, who probably would be like, have their door kicked in by DHS now because they'd think they're making weapons of mass destruction when they're just making voting machines. But back then, you know, basically what happened was, and I guess you can kind of blame the government for this. I wouldn't say, like, thank the government for it. But after, like, World War II, they trained a whole lot of people in, like, radio communications in the Army and the services and technology stuff. Like, it was the first war that really had a lot of engineers, you know? Like, in World War I, it was, like, engineers were the guys building, you know, the... building the ruts in the ground, the trenches that they worked from. And in World War II, it was like people building radar and computers and deciphering machines and jet engines. And, you know, a lot of people came back from that war, you know, missing an arm, but, you know, really curious about technology and, like, went in their basement and started building stuff. And that kind of fed into the, you know, what ended up the Silicon Valley Revolution and everything we got now and Bitcoin.
And that's how we got cyborgs.
Yep. I got one right here right now. She's cleaning my oven. She's cleaning my oven.
That's yeah. cool.
So yeah, that so is anyway. The kind of a that is the kind of a hacker that Derek is. He's that kind, that breed. Even though he's not that old.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
There was also the vending machine. The vending machine was in our other site, which was essentially your conventional vending machine, except that it both took and dispensed Bitcoin.
Heroin.
And it, yeah. Well, I don't well, think that it had any heroin, but it did have
I
bullets
thought,
in
but
it.
It had bullets, but I thought I spotted some nitrous tanks in there, but someone said it was like folded up ponchos. Were they just covered?
No, there were folded up ponchos because it rains in Lancaster, and so you're sort of hoping for that windfall sale of ponchos.
That would be Diana.
There's
Diana.
Maybe. You never know.
Diana. Yep. Well, she can't hear us yet. Let's keep talking. We'll troubleshoot her during the break.
Yeah.
Diana, I think your mic's not actualized yet. So go ahead. We'll just keep talking. You can probably hear us. Type to us if you can hear us. There's a little place to type in Fiendphone. All right. So, cyborgs. Who's for them or against them? I'm for them.
I'm totally for cyborgs.
Yeah, so she can hear us. We just can't hear her. She might have to close her Fiendphone and open it back up again if it's not seeing her microphone.
So are you saying women should be seen and not heard, Ben?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you now. Turn down like 10% on your slider on your input on your mic.
Okay, I can also back off from the mic too. How about this?
Yeah, you North Cackalackians like to get up in people's face. So do you have cyborgs there yet, or are you still like fighting over the Confederate flag?
I don't know. I'm sure we have a lot of wounded warriors with prosthetic limbs, etc. So I don't know if that counts
sort
as
cyborg of a cyborg
or not. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Well, actually, I work with a woman who lost a leg in a motorcycle accident, and she has several prosthetic limbs. In fact, one of them is capable of wearing a 6-inch heel.
Wow.
Ooh, sexy.
Yeah,
they just they could clone that leg and turn it into a whole fembot.
Yeah,
we were
right, a fembot like with the shooting like shooting bullets from her,
breasts,
I guess.
What movies are you Austin watching?
Powers.
Different than what I'm watching.
Okay. Austin Powers. Yep.
That's the origin of the fembot.
Yeah,
not
that's the
really,
fembot.
No, it isn't. There's a Twilight Zone where some scientist falls madly in love with the computer he's supposed to be running for the government. And
but
it ends
is
up
it a fembot?
That sounds like her. That sounds like the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix. And
yeah, that movie didn't really do it. Yeah, that movie was really disturbing to me. But, you know, the show I'm really liking is Humans, which is a new show, BBC show, that's basically the premise is, you know, not too distant future and upper middle class people can afford robots that look like people that pass the Turing test almost and live in your house and do your bidding and clean. Don't go filthy. Don't go filthy.
I want one.
I know.
Well, what about the movie? Has anybody seen the movie Ex Machina?
Ex Machina?
Yeah, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina
is how that's pronounced. Yeah, I saw that. No. It was really cool.
Saw it.
You know what? You pronounce it however you want. It's fine with me.
I'm reminding myself of my daughter, actually, who's always been very, very smart. But even up until, you know, later ages, like in her like later high school, early college, she would use a word in the proper context, a word that's not commonly used, but mispronounce it. It was always really cute.
That's pretty common of people that just read a lot and don't talk to actual humans. I used to do that.
Yeah.
There's actually a takeoff on that in that movie Adaptation with Nicolas Cage where he plays
I love that movie.
That's a great movie. He plays two
twin
brothers.
That is one of the best movies ever,
And the budding screenwriter, the annoying brother who learns who's like trying to be like his older brother in screenwriting after his brother's had some successful movies. The younger brother is like, well, I think my screenplay just needs a better Deus Ex Machina. And he's like, that's not how you say it. And he also mispronounces some other screenwriting. Denouement, which I'm mispronouncing, but closer than what he's saying. Denouement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's like French or something. So who cares?
Well, you know, in America, we don't have a king or a queen, so we can make up the language as we go along. We don't need anybody's permission.
Yeah, yeah. It's English anarchy. We don't follow the rules of grammar.
And yeah, that's my favorite part of how many. That's how funny how many people who are like, speak English or die, like, can't really speak English very well.
Actually, I am much more apt to follow the rules of grammar than any other rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Well, deus ex machina is Greek, and they're
Latin.
Doing great this week. So they're having us more often than we are.
And Bitcoin's going up in value against the FRNs.
Yeah.
Is it? Awesome.
But that's just kind of speculation. It's not like anybody in Greece can actually spend Bitcoin, because, you know, that's kind of like prepping. You don't decide to start prepping after the poop hits the fan. You have to be prepped and have your networks and your people and your trade all set
up.
Yeah,
it's right there in the name.
Prep. Preparing. Preparation. Yeah. And Barack Obama is a liar, he's a socialist, and his feet
and
stink.
And his feet stink.
But I'm doing a radio show over $100.
And he can't throw a baseball.
I'm doing a radio show over $100 tablet that weighs less than a pound. Oh, what a time to be alive.
And he owes himself reparations. Did you guys hear this? Barack Obama's family owned slaves, so he needs to write himself a reparations check immediately.
No, because he wouldn't be the recipient of that. He's not I guess he's an African American, okay? Like, let's
He's African American as Carla Garrick. That's what he is.
Is she 148th black? I know she's from South Africa.
No, she's from South Africa.
Yeah, that's not very.
Oh yeah, that's
African American. But he's not the same kind of African American that all the other, you know, African people who identify. He is not the.
He's not a descendant
of
slaves.
People that were brought.
Right.
Not America.
Yeah, he's not African space American. He's African hyphen American.
Yeah.
Meow, 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 meow.
I have the papers to prove it.
Meow, meow.
Worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow.
Meow. Wow, wow, wow.
Meow.
Freedom Fiends.
Welcome back. Meow, meow, this meow, is meow, the Freedom meow, Fiends. Meow, meow, meow. I completely forgot where we left off.
Robots.
What are we talking about?
Robots.
Robots, cyborgs.
Yeah.
They're taking over. They're everywhere. You can't swing a cat by the tail without hitting a robot these days.
You can't swing a robo-cat without hitting a robot. Yeah, so, you know, they're supposed to take our jobs, and then, like, we just sit around and we're poets all the time, right? And that's how it works?
Yeah.
Or is it
all right?
They take our jobs, and then we like, all starve in a ditch while the people that own the robots live like trillionaires. Live like the Saudi royal family. Do you guys know, I think David and I have talked about this, The Davi royal family, the Saudi royal family, not all of them, but like the top 1,000 of them are all like 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times richer than Bill Gates. Did you know this?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, essentially.
Because they technically own everything in the country. Like, you know, if you if you own a factory in Saudi Arabia, you're the owner of it. The Saudi royal family could just come in and kick you out and nobody'd say anything about it.
It's right there in their constitution or whatever. It's not a constitution. So when I traveled there to get your visa, you have to sign an affidavit that you'll abide by all the laws of Saudi Arabia. So I asked to see them before I agreed. And they sent me this like 18-page document of like Saudi law in summary. And it was written in articles. It was
Don't
written
be
in articles.
Gay.
I don't know that was in it per se. I didn't read the whole thing.
Yeah, so Christian had to go to Saudi Arabia on business, and he basically had to sign this document stating that if he broke, you know, several of these types of laws, like drug laws,
off with your head,
basically that he could be put to death. And so it's like the death letter. He had to sign the death letter before
Saudi Arabia beheads far more people than ISIS, and Saudi Arabia is like friends with your government if you're an American and you like your government.
Yep.
So, like, one of the articles in this document literally said everything on the land, under the land, or in the air belongs to the king.
In the air.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true. I mean,
wow,
it's amazing.
So you know, there you go. Constitutionalists of Saudi Arabia belong to the king.
It's right there, written in a magic paper. It's got to be true.
And if you want an example of a downright puritanical, like purely puritanical society, it's Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
A lot of people confuse.
It was kind of like the dream of the original Puritans that came to this country or came to this land. That was their dream, basically.
Yeah. If only they'd gone east instead of west.
Yeah.
But a lot of people confuse Saudi Arabia for Islam. It's like you can't separate the two in typical American thinking. But in fact, Saudi Arabia, by its very existence, violates some of the precepts of Islam. So, I mean, they're very, like
having a king, for example.
Yeah. Or naming the place Saudi Arabia. That's forbidden in Islam.
Yeah, it's just Arabia. That's plenty.
Lawrence of.
Yeah,
it wasn't Lawrence of Saudi Arabia.
I almost said the same thing.
The Saudi Arabian Nights. Nobody ever wrote that book. Like,
that would be like me claiming, you know, like all of the South and calling it, you know, Stone Alabama or Stone Mississippi or, you know, I mean, that's the level of arrogance that they've accomplished.
I live in Barker, California.
I'm going to look up. I'll bet there is a Stone Alabama. It
probably is. There might be. I think there is a Barker, California, actually. Isn't that up in the mountains?
No, I don't mean like a city in California. I mean like I'm renaming the state Barker, California.
Oh, I see. Just going to take possession. Well, you're already an emperor.
Saudi is not a city in Arabia. It's the name, right?
Yeah, it's a name.
All right,
Did you abdicate your position as emperor?
I did.
It's not the speed so much as all the cough syrup I drank.
I left it to my vassals to fight over, and I don't think they ever decided on who the successor was.
Oh, man. So that's kind of an insight.
How did we go from talking about robots and cyborgs to this?
We're always off the rails.
I was still kind of on that.
That's how the things work.
What can I say? Arabia is a strange, mystical land.
Yeah, that's it.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
So before the break,
this is the Freedom Fiends.
sorry, Davey, didn't mean to walk on you there. During the break and before the break, we were slamming the Saudi royal family, or the so-called royal family.
Yep. The king is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
Michael mysteriously just disappeared, and we're thinking that maybe that the Saudi king was responsible.
You know, he was picked up by the men in white robes and taken to the Department of Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil.
Will you please come with us politely and nicely and whatever?
As long as there wasn't sort of a whizzing sound and then a sudden going silent on his end, then we'll know everything is fine. After all, pretty much anybody the Saudis point at, the American government sends a hellfire missile down on them to... but anyway, that's not very pleasant. No, Michael probably just got escorted off to the side where he'll be spoken to very politely by representatives.
Mm-hmm. Haram.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
He's offended the royal family, which is essentially the same as offending God, so...
In their eyes.
It pretty much is, yeah, in Saudi Arabia, it definitely is. And so, and Davi, you were talking, or we were talking about, or Ben mentioned that the whole idea of Saudi Arabia is against Islam. And yeah. The Islamic State in and of itself, the fact that they have actually, or they are creating or have created a state, is that not also against Islam, the having an actual state like that?
Well, I would say that the majority of Muslims are statists, but in a pure reading of Islam, I definitely find the idea of a state to be abhorrent and counter to the principles of Islam. But I'm a very vocal minority. So,
you and Will both.
Yeah, but the Islamic State, absolutely, totally un-Islamic. They're just fascism in Islamic robes. That's what they are.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what the French government is.
So there you go.
United States government and the British Crown and all of those are the same thing. They're just fascists pretending to be, it's okay, we're a democracy or we're a republic or we have a constitution. Mm-hmm. But those are excuses.
Let me tell you, yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, when Christian and I were watching that the documentary that we talked about on the break, which is about the Islamic State put out by Vice TV on YouTube, anybody who's listening should check it out. We were watching it and going, oh, my goodness, this is like looking in a mirror in a lot of ways, because the way that they indoctrinate their children, it reminded me so much of the way kids are indoctrinated today in public schools in the U.S.,
How
just
so?
Like,
what do you mean?
Coaching the kids. Like, so there were a lot of kids in on camera, and the kids were kind of coached from the side in terms of what to say. And then they actually showed one of the, one of the leaders, and I don't recall exactly, the names of the leaders were, was talking to, I believe, his son, and was saying, so the Islamic State is good, right? And who are the infidels? The infidels are those that want to kill Muslims, right? And the kid was like repeating verbatim what this man was saying to him, and that's kind of like that seems to be their outreach, is to the youth big time, the younger the better. And it seemed a lot to me like, it could have been Stalinist Russia, it could have been Hitler youth, basically, or in any way that the U.S. has indoctrinated kids with the Pledge of Allegiance in a lot of ways, the way that kids are raised. Faith, even, they're just kind of they're indoctrinated to believe this stuff, and believe it's probably true and right until they grow up and possibly see something different. But it's just very scary the way that it's the kids that are being indoctrinated. But the same thing has happened here. The same thing has happened over and over again throughout history.
That's why it's so important to censor all media so that they never see anything different.
Right. Yeah.
And change history.
Rewrite the history books. Rewrite the religious religious texts. He who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future.
Right.
I actually performed with Jordan Page at a talent show at Porkfest this year, and he was in an Infidel sweatshirt. So I'm like waiting for that. I'm waiting for that video. I'm hoping somebody captured the video of that, because I just think it would be great to be like assistant director of Muslims for Liberty performing, you know, a Doors song with an Infidel Jordan Page. And
I really hate that I missed that. I mean, when was the talent show?
It was Saturday night at like 8 o'clock.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There were a bunch of other like dance parties and things, so most people went to the dance parties.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there were a lot of things on Saturday night that I really wanted to stay for, but we just couldn't. So.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing. Like, I'm kind of thinking I should wear myself an Infidel shirt, because like everybody's an Infidel to somebody.
Like, right. Exactly. That's very true. Yeah.
Or maybe a heathen shirt or a heretic shirt. I think a heretic mm-hmm. shirt would be good for me.
Yeah.
You know, because every man's truth is another man's heresy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've even as a Christian, I'm sure that there are many Christians that would not think would disagree with me, you know, professing to be a Christian. You know, they say, "Oh, you're not a Christian. You don't do this and this and this." I've even had atheists who think they know the Christian faith say, "Well, you don't do this and you don't act like this, so you must not be a Christian."
Yeah.
So
isn't that fun? That happens to me too.
Yeah, me too. I'm very familiar with having atheists. Yeah. First off, they'll throw something that there's these "I gotcha" things, you know, and we get this as anarchists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, what about the roads?
Right.
And so they'll throw something at me like that. It's very Catholic specific, or it's very, you know, Lutheran.
Oh,
specific.
Yeah. Normally is Catholic, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's fine, but I'm not Catholic. And they just look at me like,
right.
You know, no, you don't understand. You have to believe this. No, I don't. I don't.
Right. If you're a Christian, you must believe this kind of
thing.
There's
this great play. There's this play I went to a couple years ago, and the title was "All Atheists Are Muslim," and it's a love story between a Muslim girl and an atheist guy, and she like goes to mm-hmm. her father, and they like say, "Hey, we want to get married," and they want the father's blessing or whatever, and they're trying to convince the father that like the belief in any higher power whatsoever like qualifies you as a Muslim, and so they're like, "Well, he believes in gravity, doesn't he? Gravity's a higher power."
That's funny.
So I think I might just go around like accusing atheists of being Muslim because they believe in gravity. Mm-hmm.
They believe in gravity, right? Yeah. Yeah. Gravity is something you pretty much ultimately can't fight. Ultimately, it's going to get you in the end.
Yeah. Although it's more of a lower power than a higher power.
It pulls you down as opposed to pulling you up.
You ever notice the attraction of gravity in
a cereal
bowl?
In that case, it could be
bowl?
Like the devil.
No, what do you mean?
If you have a cereal bowl with just milk left in it and like two Cheerios, they will either gravitate out to the walls of the cereal bowl, or they'll gravitate together, because even in that tiny little setting, the rings of Cheerios actually have a gravitational field, and they will attract either to the walls or to each other. So you can actually see.
I'm no physicist or anything, but I think that's because of the surface tension of the water, not because of the gravitational pull.
I'm sure that affects
it
as
well.
But it's fun to think of it that way. Why not?
I was shown that though as a demonstration of how you can see gravity, you know, in working in something like that, doing something that's not going up and down. What was that, Doug?
So if you get alphabet cereal and you put it in your bowl of milk and it starts forming things, then you can be like a prophet of the gravitational forces, right?
Hey, sure. if your alphabet cereal is forming words, then you got some serious problems going on there. There needs to be an exorcism or something going on.
Yeah, possessed cereal.
Yeah, I don't think General Mills or whoever it is that makes that is putting that as part of their product. I hardly ever see that on commercials.
Yeah, there should really be like demonic labeling, the same as there's GMO labeling. Like, have you seen that woman who's convinced that like Monster's energy drink is like 666 and it's all about inverting the cross and all that stuff?
Oh, really?
What?
No. It doesn't surprise me.
I haven't heard that.
Her argument is that if you look at the M in the Monster Energy Drink logo, it looks like the number 6 in Hebrew, and so it says 666, not M. And so she says that it refers to like Beast of Revelation, and she says that if you look at the O in the Monster logo, there's a cross in it, so when you turn the can upside down to drink it, you're actually inverting the cross, and it's a whole like satanic thing.
What's it supposed to do? Like, what are the supposed results of drinking Monster then? What does she say is the result of that?
You become a harbinger of
the apocalypse.
A child
of the devil or something?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Can you avoid that by drinking it with a straw so that the cross stays in the correct orientation?
Ooh, you're tricky, Ben. You'll show them. Nope. You know what I like to do is I like to take my Monster Energy drink and pour it into like a basin of holy water so that I can be extra sure that it's okay to drink.
Now, if you do that and it foams, is that a sign that that's the demons trying to get out of it?
Yeah, that's what foam is.
Oh, man.
That's why there's foam on the ocean.
Well, the ocean actually used to be the domain of the devil. I mean, I think it was called because of the winds, because the depths of the air or something like that. And so the ocean was supposed to be the domain of the devil. And so anything that came from the ocean was then considered to be, I guess, apostate or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And I definitely read it on a website that I don't remember the name of, that the devil's throne is on water. And so like...
Well, there you go.
That must be true.
Yeah.
It's probably Atlantis. I'll bet Atlantis was like his castle or whatever.
Mm-hmm. We need further evidence. Poseidon,
I mean, well, it kind of makes sense because, you know, the devil is often shown with like a trident.
A trident, so right? He's Poseidon.
He's Poseidon.
Well, Hades was Poseidon's brother what's the other... Mm-hmm. I can't remember. The Greek and Roman names always confuse me. I always get them mixed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were brothers.
Hades is hell, and Poseidon is... I don't remember what Poseidon is.
Leviathan? No,
whatever,
it
doesn't matter. So I guess we're saying that Hades should really return his trident to Poseidon because he's really confusing people.
With his monster drink.
But he's giving us stuff to talk about.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Meow, 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 meow. That must be meow, Devil Kitty. Meow. Devil Kitty had too much monster drink.
Oh, cats are definitely possessed by the devil. That's why witches like them so much.
Yep. They're familiars. Yep. Witches use them as familiars.
Wait a minute. Does that mean that the devil can, like, buy, like, is he in more than one place at a time? If, like, more than one thing is possessed by the devil, is there only one? Like, does he co-locate?
No, I think he just sends his demons as representatives to possess different things.
Oh, okay.
Or something
so
along
he's possessed
lines.
By demons, not the devil.
Yeah, because I don't think the devil is omnipresent the way that God supposedly is.
Yeah, he's got better things to do. He's pretty busy. He's got a very full schedule. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean,
he
is
Congress
just an
all.
Angel after all. I mean, he's what with Congress exactly?
Yeah, a lot of whispering to do in those halls of power.
Congress keeps him plenty busy. That's for sure.
Yeah, right. Like if you were the devil and your whole like mission in life was to like lead mankind astray in the biggest way possible, would you really like go after like some poor little girl in some like rural countryside cottage, or would you like just go? I would go big if it were me. Like I'd go for the president. I'd go for the advisors of the chiefs of whatever. Like
Why not?
It's just me. And if I were the devil, that's what I'd do.
Yeah. And you know, it's like it's very insidious. I mean, it's just you know, it does it kind of on the sly, and so nobody is really aware, and so then you have like a lot of Christians that are not only I think a lot of Christians that are saying, and once in a while I'll run across the 700 Club when I'm flipping channels, and they are very political, and they are like, oh, they're so scared about Hillary becoming president, and you know, and oh, we got to get a good, you know, God fearing Republican back in there, and
they're the ones who are like hurricanes are caused by people eating shellfish and stuff like that, right? isn't that what the 700 Club is about?
No, I think what Pat Robertson actually said was that was it Hurricane Katrina that it hit the U.S. I mean, probably I think because of, you know, general debauchery, and I think primarily.
And why is there a drought in California?
Because socialism.
For the same reason. Because so, yeah, well, there's that too. Yeah.
So too much rain equals the gays' fault. Not enough rain equals mm-hmm. the gays' fault.
Mm-hmm,
That's a pretty cut and dry diagnosis there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't Proposition 8. What was it?
No, now it's the Supreme Court decision. It's the Facebook avatars. That's why.
Right. So let's wait for the next disaster, and we'll know what to blame it on.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Everybody displaying the rainbow on Facebook.
How do they pick? Like, how do they know that it's not, like, because people... I don't know what other sort of strange biblical laws
there are. All of that. You know, it's just, like, it's probably because New Orleans is all about... It's kind of like, you know, it's all about debauchery, essentially. You know, and you know, it's kind of a sin city, if you will, and
yeah.
You know, so they were directly,
because remember in the Bible when Jesus went to all of the like prostitutes and tax collectors and then hit them with hurricanes?
Uh-huh. Yes. My point exactly. I mean,
well, if the theory is correct that God would punish, you know, New Orleans specifically because of something that whatever, then why wouldn't he pick on Taipei or a place like that where there's a huge non-Christian population that, you know, engage in all kinds of non-Christian activity? Why not Tokyo? Why not, you know, there's just huge Asian cities where there are very few Christians in relative proportion.
Oh, they get typhoons. They get typhoons over there, earthquakes, and you know, China has its share of floods and that type of thing. So, you know, I mean, there you go. I mean, there's the proof right there.
So
how do they know? I always wonder how they know, right? So like they're watching they turn on the television and the Weather Channel comes on and they're like, you know, hurricane whatever is on its way in, and they think, and then what? Like, how do they know which sin caused the hurricane? How what is the process of reasoning that leads them to this conclusion? I don't get it. I want to be in their head for like an hour.
I more think it's the general sinfulness and non-repentance, really, is what they think it is.
Then Washington would have been gone years ago.
For real.
Worms.
We'll be back right after the hour. Stick with us.
Worms.
Worms.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Meow.
is the Freedom Fiends. Secreting seditious sounds from the flaccid fiend bone of liberty, we give you a crypto chiropractic crack to strengthen your spine against the roving wiretaps of tyranny. I'm here with Ben Stone, the bearded possum, and Diana Kyler, the laughing kitty. And this is your reminder that Freedom Fiends is brought to you by the BIPCOT No Government License, which means it's free to use by anyone except governments. Find out more at BIPCOT.org.
That looks heavy. I'm a little sore right now. It's kind of stretched tight.
Yeah.
And it hurts even more when I smile and laugh, but that's okay.
So are you still both enjoying the afterglow of Porkfest?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Let me tell you something. I totally got on my soapbox today at school with a couple of girls who are sort of open to hearing the message of liberty. And I really kind of got on a roll with them talking about it. And I actually got cold chills talking about it. And it was really, really cool. What I talked to them about was they were talking about the whole, you know, SCOTUS decision about gay marriage and everything, and how, you know, some people are so against that. And I said, I understand that this is a big step for a lot of people. I said, but the better question that people should be asking is, why do we need state affirmation for two people to affirm a union between two people who love each other, two adults that love each other? Like, why do we need that? You know, yeah. And I explained, you know, how one of the reasons for marriage certificates in the first place in this country anyway had to do with preventing interracial marriage.
Right.
Yep.
And I think most people don't realize that. And I just said, you know, once you start asking yourself, why do we need this? You know, why do we need this from the state? You kind of start to ask yourself, well, why do we need these other things? It's like I almost feel kind of bad because I want people's eyes open, but at the same time, I know the pain that comes with that.
Yeah.
In the 1600s and 1700s in Appalachia.
Because you can't go back to sleep very easily.
In the 1600s and 1700s in Appalachia, when two people decided that they were going to get married, they would just go tell their families, essentially. And assuming that there wasn't some kind of a blood feud between the families or whatever, as long as the families were comfortable with the union, then the parents of the daughter would take the newly married couple into their home, and this is without any ceremony. It's just, yeah, we're getting married, okay? You're married, so the parents of the bride would take the couple into their home, and they would live in their home until the traveling preacher, which might be 3 to 6 months away, comes through and actually writes it in their Bible and signs it. And he does a little, he did a little Christian thing with them to officiate it. But essentially, they were married as soon as they went to their parents, and their parents accepted the union. And I should mention, too, that in clans where this took place like this, not only in Appalachia, but in Scotland, where it all came from originally, when two people would get married and they would move in with the bride's family, you didn't have a lot of like wife beating and stuff like that, because the new husband would be in the household with all the brothers of his wife, and if he was abusive, that was a very unhealthy situation for him to be in if he was abusive with his new wife. So it literally, without a government, there was a process for this all to take place without police, without courts, without clergy, without any of the normal things that we think of. And, you know, and that's all it was to get married, was an agreement between the families, and it's done. And then later on, getting the clergy involved was just a paperwork thing so that there was something in the family Bible that you know, made a note of it.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Another
we don't need no
tale.
Stinking state affirmation. Not at all. I mean, that's the way it ought to be. I mean, you know, not necessarily going to live with your, you know, wife's parents or whatever, but, you know, two people saying, I love you too, you know, let's commit to each other, you know, drop a contract if you need to between the two of you. I mean, if that's what you feel is necessary. But other than that, it's like, well, follow the money. That's what it's all about. You know, that in some state would to have that state sanctioned contract between the two of you. So, you know, it's like
It's just absurd. I don't understand it. Like, especially to call what is going on under a state licensed traditional marriage. Like, there's no period in history where there were not cultures with a wide variety of different definitions of marriage, and some of them were pretty egalitarian and some of them were pretty authoritarian, but like there's no like one definition of marriage across societies.
Even within Christian cultures in Europe, you know, prior to coming to the New World, marriage was very different up in the, you know, in the Scandinavian areas than it was, say, down in Greece or, you know, in France or whatever. There's no such thing as, I guess, Davi's point that I'm agreeing with is there's no such thing as traditional marriage. It's always weird.
Right.
It's just little DNA molecules trying to replicate themselves. Let them figure it out on their own.
What are we, DNA scientists? It's not up to us.
Yeah, what do I look like?
Oh, so the afterglow of Pork Fest.
Well, now that we've solved the gay marriage debate.
Yeah. What about those flags? No, but I was asking Diana, though, about the afterglow. So that was what inspired you to have that conversation?
Right. Yeah, I think so. I mean, because it's just still so fresh, and I don't want it to not be fresh anymore. So it's inspired. And, you know, I had gotten a little complacent with, with reading. Well, actually, I'm always reading. I'm always on Twitter. I'm always finding articles to read and everything. But in terms of, you know, like listening to a lot of podcasts and I had been doing some recording or some narrations for the Mises Institute for their daily articles. And that kind of fell by the wayside when I got really busy with school and work and everything. And I'm actually going to start that back up again. I'm not going to be recording any articles because they kind of put that on hold for now because they don't have enough narrators. But I've been invited to narrate a Murray Rothbard. I don't want to call it a book. It's a book more like a, like the Anatomy of the State or like the Law by Bastiat. It's more kind of that length. So it's so I'm excited about doing that. I just I want to put more energy into that again because I had gotten a little complacent. But I'm super stoked about it, and I can't wait. I'm planning on going to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Coalition Festival in August. That's August 6th through the 10th. I went last year, and it's kind of like a miniature Pork Fest. It's a lot more intimate. It's it's just kind of all the cool people. It's like all the cool kids go there. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun, and I'm hoping both of y'all are planning to attend, maybe.
I'd like to be there. I don't know if we're going to be
in Michigan.
Really decided yet?
Yeah. What'd you say, Davi?
I haven't really decided yet. It all kind of comes down to money. So, so I had a really great time at Pork Fest. Probably my best so far. Like life affirming experience at Pork Fest this year. But I didn't make the sales that I did last year. So I kind of came home, and now I'm going to try and figure out what's next for me because I didn't make enough to go to the next event.
You didn't lose any Bitcoin wallets or anything this year, did you?
No, in that sense, I made exponentially more than I did last year.
Nothing like a little salt in a wound there.
Yeah.
So we discussed it off air, and you've discussed it on other Fiend shows, but on the weekend here, it hasn't been brought up. During the big gay dance party on Friday night at Pork Fest.
Oh, yeah. I love this story.
You and Will fed the big gay dance party. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, so it wasn't just the two of us. There was a team of maybe five Muslims that did this, but so last year we did a Ramadan evening meal because Ramadan started during Pork Fest. We just did one. Mm-hmm. This year Ramadan straddled Pork Fest entirely, so we did a meal every night. But the big gay dance party is a huge draw, so we were like up on the hill serving our meals, and we're like, nobody's here. Like, there's no foot traffic at our tent, so we just figured we would bring the food to the party. And so we went up and sort of set up outside the big gay dance party. And as people were sort of wandering out, we're like, hey, come get some free food, right? Like, who doesn't love free food? Gay people eat too. So it was great, you know? Like, so you have these like Muslims who are there and they've got their beards and they're saying like, happy Ramadan and here's having some free food. And then you have these like people coming out of this party, like dressed in their fishnets and their corsets and their like rainbow tutus and
whatnot.
Yeah, it was just, you know, nothing particularly unusual about it at all.
I just think that right there, that is just beautiful to me. I mean, it's, I was trying to explain to these ladies that I'm in school with about, you know, Porkfest and what it was all about, and it sounds so implausible coming out of my mouth that people from such different, I guess, ways of life and different backgrounds and everything can come together in such a way that there's just this common thread of knowing, first of all, that what's going on out here in the world, you know, on a daily basis with, you know, with the state of the U.S. and really the state of the world, as well as just, you know, the way people just sort of walk around blindly all the time. But here we were able to come together and it's like, I don't know. It felt like a big family. It just feels like a big family to me. Yeah.
Yeah, there are no strangers at Porkfest.
It's wonderful. I wish I could stay there all the time. No.
Say that again, Dovey. I missed it.
I said it's like a big extended tribe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like you go to Porkfest and it's like one big like Liberty tribe. And then there's like there's all these little sub-clans in the Liberty tribe.
Right. And, you know, and there's like the kind of the Venn diagram too, because a lot of these overlap, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I guess anyway, not everybody awesome. At the big gay dance party is gay. It's sort of a
no. I was there. I'm not gay.
It's a theatrical whatever. It's a party. It's loud music and dancing.
It's just, it's good times. So you can fill us in a little bit. Nobody's going to look at you twice.
Fill us in a little bit on Ramadan, Davi. When you're talking about the evening meal, this is free food. I mean, the tradition is to share food with somebody, right? It's not making money on food.
Yeah.
Right? You guys weren't selling food.
So, so the fast is from dawn until dusk. So in the daylight hours, Muslims refrain from food and drink. And then at night, they break their fast, and there's usually evening activities and things like that. But during the day, Will was selling food because there's like people wandering on the park, and he's just sort of like making food, and that's what he's doing to make money. But then essentially, like at dusk, he's like, nope, no more money. We're not selling anything anymore. We're going to serve like 400 meals a night, because that's what you do for Ramadan. You go and you feed people. So that's what we did.
Cool.
Yay.
We'll be
worms.
Back.
Worms.
Feed the people. All the things.
Feed the people all the things. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
My cat's looking at me like, what meow, are meow. You doing? This is the Freedom Fiends.
Well, it's some kind of reference to a Chinese leader from the 60s, right? Meow, meow.
Yeah, it's Mao Zedong.
Meow.
Meow.
Stinking communists on the radio.
Meow.
So we were talking about Ramadan. I think a lot of people in the United States don't understand that one of the aspects of Islam that really make it pretty amazing is that courtesy and being kind to strangers and helping the poor is a major part of Islam.
Yeah. So like, it's not the only reason, but one of the major reasons for fasting in the first place is to be able to empathize with people who are hungry. So the idea is that if you never experience hunger yourself, you might not really understand the plight that hungry people are in. And so there's a big emphasis on that, which also sort of means like feeding the poor. And there's a lot of like, it's the biggest month for charity in the Muslim community. So like, there's an annual sort of tithing of, called zakat, which is 2.5% of your wealth, And some people give it to organizations, but it's sort of preferred to give it directly to the needy. But on top of that, like, it's also the biggest month for just general donations, like for just normal charity. And so it's definitely like the busy season in the Muslim community.
And the other thing has to do with discipline, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's this idea that, like, hunger is sort of one of the core appetites that humans have, right? But there's not a lot of, like, consequences if you fail, right? So you're engaged in this activity where you're prohibiting yourself from something that isn't really harmful or anything. Like, if you're weak and you fail, the worst that's going to happen is, like, you eat, like, a hamburger or something.
A burger, yeah.
But it means that you're strengthening your will against an appetite or against a desire so that when you are in a consequence environment the rest of the year, you have sort of a better strength to like hold to, you know, your goals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely find that's true.
So the discipline can apply in many different areas. A discipline that you gain from abstaining from food, even when you're super hungry, can definitely, it kind of builds that discipline muscle.
Exactly.
In order to, so. And you also mentioned, too, I remember we were talking about how the times, and I think it's the same, it reminds me a lot of the Christian Lent, but it seems that Lent is kind of like a lightweight compared to the way Ramadan, it should be practiced. And I think Lent was intended to be practiced the same way, but it's like, oh, the fast is over. Let me just like pour every single bit of food I can find into my, open orifice of my face, just cram it in there kind of thing. And so that sort of flies in the face of the whole idea of the actual discipline of Ramadan. And I think that you mentioned something about that. Yeah.
It's a different kind of discipline, right? So there's like the discipline of not eating in the hours when you're not supposed to. But then the second discipline is when the hour comes and you're allowed to eat, do you then discipline yourself and not overeat, right? Mm-hmm. And most people do. Like honestly, statistically, most people gain weight during Ramadan because it's like a Thanksgiving meal every night. But I found at Porkfest that wasn't the case at all. That because I was so, like, I was in control of my diet, I was in control of my schedule. Like, I found it easy for me to take a very sort of minuscule amount of nourishment and keep going. And so, like, I wasn't hungry and I didn't eat very much and I wasn't tired and I didn't sleep very much. And it was like,
wow,
I was just floating around Porkfest in this like weird altered state a lot of the week. And it was very good.
Yeah, so you didn't need any mind altering substances.
Yeah. Deprive yourself long enough and calories become an altered state.
Right. Yeah. And so and a side benefit of that is you managed to drop weight at Porkfest.
Oh yeah, I dropped 7 pounds at Pork. That's bordering on unhealthy.
I'm so jealous.
To lose 7 pounds in 10 days. But I'm willing to bet a lot of it was water weight too.
Yeah. And yet you don't look emaciated.
Well, I was a little plump before. I'm still a little plump.
Oh, well.
But yeah, I mean, awesome. Like, even dieting, if you think about dieting, a lot of dieting is about willpower, right? So, like, to strengthen that thing, to break hunger as this addiction, like, it's probably one of the more difficult ones because it's one that you can't give up, right? Like, hunger is one of these where you have to form an Aristotelian mean. So it's like trying to quit smoking when you have a pack of cigarettes in your hand all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In that way, an addiction or an eating disorder is very different than, say, like an addiction to alcohol or drugs.
Sure. Yeah. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Wow. Meow. Wow. Meow.
think we're skipping a little bit. We're skipping.
The thing, stuff cut out, and then all I could hear was Davi, "Row, wow."
Yeah, our connection's
bouncing.
Hey,
Ben, bouncing. Do Quakers have anything like a fast?
If they do, it's an individual thing that a person has come up with, because there's no leader in in Quaker thought. There's no leader, so there's no person to say this is going to be the way it is, or that's going to be the way. And a lot of Quakers have a high regard for Scripture, and a lot of Quakers don't. So even if there was, let's say, if there was something clearly written in the Bible that said you have to fast for Lent or whatever, then some Quakers would just say, I don't go by that. So it's very individualistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you?
I like that.
I used to fast.
Me? What about you, Ben?
I used to fast quite a bit when I was, this was back in the 80s. I was just trying to kind of get my brain straightened out and trying to establish what I actually believed. And so I fasted quite a bit then, but as the years went by, I think I kind of settled into what I believe, and I wasn't seeking any further. So I haven't fasted in a long time, which is probably bad.
Oddly, the times when I was a practicing Catholic and I did practice Lent, I wasn't always very disciplined about fasting, but the times that I was disciplined about fasting. In a very strange way, and I can't explain it, I did feel closer to God. And it wasn't so much that I don't think that I was really in an altered state, because I didn't fast like you fasted, Davi. But it was weird. It was like there was something about it that made me feel, it was almost it was like a numinous kind of experience in a way. You know, it was like I really had this like a greater sense of communion with God, and I can't explain it. So it was
what kind
was
of fasts
kind of
would
cool
you do?
In that respect. There were days that I would fast completely and I wouldn't eat anything. Most of the time, it was just mainly abstaining from certain foods, and that, and a lot of times that's what people do give up during Lent, are certain foods like candy and stuff like that. But it was primarily the when I would do the fasting of not consuming any food. I would still drink water, but yeah, just the not consuming any food at all. And it was typically on days like on Good Friday you fast, and I'm trying to think, there was a couple of other days that you would fast as well. A lot of Catholics would fast on every Friday during Lent. And the rest of the time it would just be like small meals throughout the day. It wouldn't be anything that you would normally eat. So I mean, if you were doing it correctly. Sure. According to the way the church prescribes it. But and again, like you said, it's not one of those things that if you break it, nobody's going to come and like the Lent police aren't going to come and say you're not doing this right,
unless you live in Saudi Arabia.
Right, unless you live in Saudi Arabia, which places like that, I mean, Ramadan is a forced practice.
Yeah.
It's enforced by the state, so
A lot of people.
I used to do like verbal fasts, like
that's a good idea too. Just kind
of
keeping
like
your
a
mouth
vow
shut
of silence.
Listening.
Yeah, I did a vow of silence for a month, and then I experimented with a language called E-prime, which is English without the word is or be or are. So you can never say what something actually, what state of existence a thing is. You can only say how it is measured by something else. And then the other is I-prime. I-prime is the English language without I and me and statements of identity. And so it forces you to speak about the other person and not about yourself. And that was sort of, those are really interesting experiments. Yeah. And it was sort of about those are more personal. Those are more like Quaker fasts, I guess. Like I just felt driven to do them.
So this was like a complete vow of silence for a whole month. In other words, you didn't speak a word for a whole month?
Yes.
Wow. What about written word?
I think I kept a blog. So I was blogging about the experience. But yeah, not speaking to people in person.
Hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, there's actually when I was taking the yoga teacher training, there was something and I don't remember what it was called. It starts with an M. I think it's like Muma or not Mama or something. It's something along those lines, where you take an hour out of your day every single day and you don't speak a word, and you also don't right, you don't participate in, and you don't, like, you don't have the radio on, you don't have the television on, you know, you're not texting, you're not taking phone calls. It's like complete, you know, no technology and no speaking. And the instructor for the yoga teacher training said that she would do this, and she would actually be out grocery shopping and everything, and people would try to speak to her, and she would just like nod at them and not say anything. And she said it was a very strange experience. It was something I was able to do as long as I wasn't around other people.
Yeah. I did have a note card that I presented to police if they hassled me downtown, because there was a lot of downtown ordinances in Santa Cruz. And so if you were sitting in a place for too long, they would come and hassle you. And so I had a card that said, like, I'm exercising my right to remain silent under the First Amendment this time. Like, the interesting thing was, like, when you first go silent, like, some people, like, take it as an opportunity to just talk to you forever, and you sort of become this listener. And then after a while, I, like, realized I don't have to listen because they're not expecting me to respond.
Yeah, at that point, you're essentially being used as a sounding board. They don't really care if you're
present.
Listening.
Yeah. That's all. I'm not going to be tested on this later.
Right.
I think most people that are talking a lot are like that anyway. Go ahead, Diana.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a show called The New Girl. It's just it's a sitcom, and I haven't watched it in a while. But there is this one character's name's Nick, and he found this guy. I don't know. He was going through some sort of existential crisis, and so he finds this guy sitting on a bench in a park. This Asian guy, and he sits down and he just starts talking to this guy, and this guy never, ever, ever says a word back to him. It ended up being sort of this recurring theme on the show that he would always find this guy in a park on a bench, and whenever he needed somebody to talk to, and he would just sit there and talk to this guy who we don't know if he really was listening or even could understand English, but it's pretty funny.
That's cool.
We all need one of those.
I mean, I think it's a fun sort of practice anyway. Like, for me, it's all about... you know, to have parallax, you need two eyes, right? The only way to tell distance and keep yourself in a straight line is to navigate from two perspectives. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's valuable to sometimes get out of your sort of base book reality tunnel and try to look at the world from another perspective, because it'll help you navigate in a straight line, right?
I had a...
That's deep, Davi.
One of my concussions that I had during the 80s, I found myself 6 months or so after the concussion really having some anger problems. And at the time, I was riding back and forth to work on a motorcycle. I probably have done that more than driving a car. But at the time, I was living in the desert in Southern California, riding my motorcycle back and forth to work in the middle of the summer, which is, if you have a helmet, then the heat builds up in the helmet and it's extremely hot on your head, which is, you know, very uncomfortable. And then if you take your helmet off, then you have wind-induced heat, which is, it's kind of like, you know how you have a wind chill effect
friction.
When
it's
cold?
Friction.
Yeah. But the wind will actually more efficiently transfer the heat into your skin than without it. So you actually can even get hotter by taking your helmet off on a hot day. Like, we're talking Southern California desert, so we're talking 110, 115 degrees. And you throw a 70-mile-an-hour wind on that, and it will just cook your brain. So wearing a helmet for an hour riding to home from work every day, I found myself really angry by the time I got home. And so for months, I would just pull into a park. As soon as I got into the town where I was like 3 blocks away from home. I would pull into a park, park my bike, get off, go. There was this one tree, and I would take my helmet off and just sit down in the shade of this tree and sit there for 30 minutes and not say a word.
Like a Bodhi tree.
And yeah, it was. I just sat there and meditated and closed my eyes and just relaxed, and I didn't move and I didn't speak. And I got to the point of where, like, even if an ant was crawling on me or something, I just wouldn't move. And that that therapy, so to speak, but it was meditation. But I didn't think about God. I didn't think about reality. I didn't think about any. I just was dead quiet, and I tried not to think. Mm-hmm. And that was very therapeutic, and it got me past that point with the concussion of where I was able to overcome that daily anger that I was feeling every day. And my wife appreciated me coming home, you know, not mad, too. That was a big deal.
Yeah, I think the point of meditation is to ultimately become thought free.
Yeah, and that scares some people, but there's, you know, as long as you think sometimes.
Yeah. So how many concussions have you had, Ben?
I don't know. I say more than 35 because I stopped counting. It got redundant to continue to try to keep track. So I know that there's at least, and this is, like, I'm real picky about how I count them. If I can't remember the events, then I don't count it. Because, you know, I can't verify it. So there are people who saw me get a concussion from a skateboard in 1980 that was pretty severe, but I don't remember it. So I can't count that one. So in excess of 35. Actually, in that concussion...
Wow.
in that concussion, I had 3 days that I have no memory of that three-day period.
Oh, my goodness. I thought I'd had a lot. I've had like three or four. I thought that was a lot.
Rookie.
Wow. Hey, when I play hard.
I don't think I've ever had a concussion.
I had one. I had one attempting to use a sled as a snowboard one time. Yep.
It's weird, the one that I can't remember.
As an adult, mind you, yes.
The one that I can't remember that I was describing there is really strange because I was active. I had a very active party life at the time, and I was with about six or eight people when I got the concussion. I have no memory for like an hour and a half or 2 hours before it, and for the next few days I have no memory. But I was functional. I was like walking around. I went to parties. I went to stores. I bought things. I didn't go home during the entire time. I don't know where I slept or if I slept. But, you know, I functioned, talked to people. They thought everything was fine.
Meow.
Strange days.
We'll be back after this trip to the market with the Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. 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 Into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Hey, there's some Squizcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons. And you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Redemption in the final act. How are we going to have redemption from a 2 hours of goofiness? Go ahead.
I don't know. I, I've been I've been thinking a lot about how we should start like adding fiend to stuff that we say, you know, the way that Batman shows you say, you know, bat this and bat that. Like it should be like, you know, the, like we have fiend phone. It should be in the next fiend segment.
Sure. Same right after fiend station, same fiend time.
Same fiend time, exactly.
We do get a bit campy sometimes. Okay. So we have a lot in common with the old Batman show.
Yeah.
We should invest in some really high-powered sound effects like whams and bams and zacks. Mm-hmm. And that was what made that show.
Yeah.
And the wonderful costume.
It's so cheesy when you go back and watch it now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing.
We should all perform in leotards.
I actually met one of the cat women, Lee Merriweather.
Really?
There's more than one cat woman?
Yeah, there was more than one cat woman. She wasn't the most famous one. I think it was, God, what is that lady's name? Oh, Merriweather. I met her, actually did a show with her when I was in theater in college.
Hmm.
She was the, guest artist. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that they got the level of actors that they did for that show. Like Vincent Price was on there. I can't remember the guy that played the Penguin. Yeah. All of the evil villains were pretty big name actors at the time that would come on and do their little spot as their campy little villain.
Who was Vincent Price on Batman?
I don't know. He had like a big brain. He had like a bald head and a big brain. I can't remember his character's name. But the
was
like
it
the
Brainiac?
I don't know.
Egghead.
Egghead.
Wow,
that's him.
There he is.
Yeah. And that was kind of like the peak of his career, too. I mean, that wasn't the peak of his career, but his career was peaking about in that same time frame. And then what's his name? The Penguin was a famous actor. Can't remember his name. And then pretty much all the villains. We're all, you know. How do you do that? How do you have a show as goofy as the original Batman and have big time people come on it? I guess it's kind of like The Simpsons has big time people come on for little parts. But
right, that's true. Yeah.
Or Star Trek, you'll often get cameos from relatively big actors on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
It could be like, you know, that the actors happen to be huge fans of the show and they call them up and say, hey, can I be on your show? Because I love your show kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Like the actor who played Hector in Breaking Bad, the guy in the wheelchair with the oxygen tank.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was in Star Trek. He played like a scientist who was like trying to create Krieger waves or something and accidentally like blew up a space station. And it was a trial.
Oh,
it was like a courtroom drama.
Wow. He was in one of the big mafia movies, too. I can't remember if it was, which was? Oh, no. It was in, with Say Hello to My Little Friend, that movie. What was the name of that movie?
Oh,
Scarface?
Yeah, he was in Scarface.
Scarface, yeah.
How do you like that? I can pick it out even though I haven't seen it.
You've never seen Scarface? That's it. I'm not talking.
I've never seen Scarface.
We are no longer
friends. I've never seen.
You know the catchphrase from Scarface.
The Godfather. Never seen The Godfather.
Wow.
No.
I shun you.
I know
you.
It's blasphemy, right?
I shun you, Davi.
Heresy. I know.
You guys. You know what? You need to get together and you need to form a department of enjoining good and forbidding evil media, and do a Clockwork Orange with me and make me watch all the good mafia movies.
I'm rending my clothing, announcing that you're dead now, Davi. He's dead to me. Davi is dead,
all right.
To me.
You're dead to me. You're dead to me.
Oh, wow.
This came up recently. What was it? Oh, it was MK did Kung Fury. I'm not sure if I can be friends with someone who doesn't like Kung Fury.
Kung Fury? I don't even know that. I'll have to
go Google it. It's so good. Okay. It came out like 6 months ago. It's like everything the 80s was packed into like 30 minutes of CGI beauty.
Oh, wow. Okay. Kung Fury.
Yep.
So that's our redemption, Kung Fury.
Worms.
Worms.
Had fun doing the show, folks.
Well, it's been a great show. Yeah, for sure.
I miss you already, Davi.
I know. I miss everybody.
We need to have a pork fest down here in the south near the Mises Institute.
We'll just do a bean fest. We'll take over pork fest.
That's right.
Worm.